This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
National Labs team up on pre-exascale supers.
Sounds great. So what's next?
Good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for January 18, 2013. Available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined once again by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. So you got some news for us, sort of an exascale pregame show for us going on here.
Yeah, this pregame show is going to go on for a while. It's not like the Super Bowl that just goes on for a couple weeks of pregame. This is right. This is going to be a seven-year pregame show. but some things are sort of moving. The DOE labs are sort of making some noises about getting their pre-exascale system. Now, of course, everything's a pre-exascale system, but
right, they're all pre-exascale now.
Supposedly, these are the systems that they're going to deploy in the next few years. They're probably going to be, hopefully, the last capability leading-edge supercomputers before they start looking at the exaflop level machines. So they've started doing the RFIs for them, which is the prelude to the request for proposals, the RFPs.
Right.
So they're sort of getting the ball moving. And the interesting thing here is the DOE is sort of heading this whole effort right now for the U.S., the U.S. government, and they've split themselves for the time being into two teams of three labs apiece. So we've got, on one side, we've got Oak Ridge, Argonne, and Lawrence Livermore labs, and then we've got Berkeley Lab with Los Alamos and Sandia on the other side with another sort of set of or another proposal, sort of separate RFDs, but basically aiming at the same type of thing, these pre-exascale supercomputers.
Yeah, these teams of the national labs are interesting to me, to look at Oak Ridge, Argonne, Livermore in this CORAL initiative, which I think you said stood for collaboration between Oak Ridge, Argonne, and Livermore,
right,
doing a joint RFI. DOE being in charge is not the surprise, but it's interesting to see the labs partnering up like that to take on the RFI.
Yeah, we've seen them do something similar to this for the capacity system that on the DOE side. They had a tri-lab initiative that was subsequently awarded to APRO. They got the
right
three labs. But for the capability systems, these leading edge supercomputers, this is the first time that I can remember that the labs have teamed up. These are the, $50, $100 million supercomputers, and obviously they're very expensive, and the effort to procure those is expensive as well. And I think the DOE has thought, well, we're going to get basically the same types of systems for more or less the same application sets. So we might as well team up, and it looks like they sort of split up according to sort of the refresh cycle. So we've got the Oak Ridge, Argonne, and Lawrence Livermore people looking out to late 2016, early 2017 for deployment, and then the Berkeley Lab and Los Alamos and Sandia triumvirate looking more towards the end of 2015 for those systems for their refresh.
Well, yeah, let's focus on that for a second, because NERSC, which is Berkeley Lab, has started installing Edison, right, will be several multi-petaflop machines. So that's already coming out. But then there are questions about what the refresh cycle is on that, right?
For the next generation machines, I mean, we don't know the sort of the petaflop rating on that. They haven't really talked about it very much. We think it's somewhere under 100 petaflops for those systems, but it could be up to 100 petaflops. But
right,
probably in the 2015 timeframe, it can't be much more than that. Just the technology won't be there for much more than that. Now we know, the Cray XC30 system that they've talked about can scale up to 100 petaflops, but no vendors even talked anything beyond that. That's on anything other than on the drawing board right now.
Well, here's what interests me about these three lab deals for the path to exascale proposals for these capability type machines like you were discussing is ultimately only one of the labs is going to actually possess the machine, right? It's going to sit somewhere. So it winds up looking like it's Oak Ridge's machine or Livermore's machine, regardless how many labs are in on the bid, doesn't it? I mean, it's not like it's a cloud.
Well, no, actually, for the Oak Ridge team, each of those labs will get their own system.
They'll each get a separate 100 petaflop system?
Well, it won't always be 100 petaflop. I mean, probably Oak Ridge will probably have the biggest one. So, like, the range for that system, which is going to come out, like I said, late 2016, early 2017, those will be 100-plus petaflop systems. Those will be a couple years later than the Berkeley Lab group. So those will be in between 100 and 300 petaflops. I'm guessing Oak Ridge will get probably the largest one, closer to 300 maybe, and then Argonne and Lawrence Livermore will get somewhat smaller systems. But they're all right now looking to get their own systems. Now on the other team, it looks like Berkeley will get its own system, and then Los Alamos and Sandia will get a system called Trinity, probably to be installed at Los Alamos. So we're talking, if all of these go through and get funded, we're talking about five systems that are pre-exascale, but they're going to be a range of capabilities from anywhere maybe from 30 to 300 petaflops if you look at all six labs.
Well, let's talk about who the likely vendors are who are going to be in on these scale of machines. So we've hypothesized before that Intel might be lining up to be the prime on an exascale bid, but for these nearer term machines, they're only a few years out. I think that's premature to hypothesize that Intel might be the prime. That brings us back to the primary U.S.-based system vendors, assuming they're not going to go outside the U.S. to a foreign system vendor.
That's a good bet.
Which is a good bet.
That's
so,
a DOE, yeah.
Yeah, you've got Cray and IBM are the likely obvious choices, followed by maybe SGI, Dell. I don't know if HP could get in there or not. But even if IBM and Cray are the leaders, IBM has said very clearly that they're not going to do unprofitable business at the peak of the supercomputing market. And in fact, they previously pulled out of Blue Waters. I mean, is this Cray's business to lose?
Yeah, I think in a sense, I think especially if you look at the Berkeley team, which includes Los Alamos and Sandia, their last set of buys and even Berkeley Lab going before that have been Cray systems. So they're sort of, you know, the favorite there. I think they're just going to buy another Cray machine for this sub 100 petaflop system. Now on the other side with Oak Ridge, Argonne, Lawrence Livermore, there's a mix legacy there of Cray and Blue Gene technology. So that's a little bit up for grabs. I have a feeling, you know, they could take both of them. They have the option there of picking up a couple of platforms. So I think they're going to spread the love a little bit and probably pick both of them. I don't think the U.S. government wants to lose IBM as a top-end supercomputer maker. So, but it is going to be a little bit touch and go there because, like you said, and like I've written about, IBM is not going to be in this business anymore as a lost leader thing. They want to make money out of it. So, right now everybody's being squeezed. I mean, the DOE is trying to save money here. I'm not sure how big an IBM system they're going to be able to buy, but I know they want to keep companies like IBM in the mix here. It's very critical to the federal government to do so.
And if IBM is going to be dropping out and you always want to have a second vendor to put up against Cray, then that opens the question of whether SGI or Dell might fill that space. SGI maybe is interesting from a technology standpoint in that they have the different architectures that they could bring into play. But the other role that IBM had is being the large established vendor that you're confident that they're going to be around. And you know, they've got other business other than supercomputing, and Dell looks a little bit more like that than an SGI does. So it's interesting. You could make the case either way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible SGI could get in there. I think they would have to do more than they're doing right now to get awarded one of these systems. I mean, just looking at the legacy of what they've got now, I mean, they've got to move these applications over. Obviously, it's not an impossible task. I mean, these are all are very much x86 to a certain extent, not the IBM stuff, but the others are x86 cluster type machines. So it's recompile and go, hopefully. But there is, I think, at the capability level, a lot of momentum behind, sort of this BlueJeans franchise as well as the Cray system. So unless something changes, especially in the short term for this 2015 systems, I don't see much difference there. Now, further out to 2016.
You're bringing up the concept of architecture, though. First of all, the IBM is a different architecture with the BlueJeans and its follow-on. But beyond that, we haven't talked about the role of accelerators in any of this and how much we think GPUs or Xeon Phis would play a role in reaching some of these peak numbers.
Right. Now, actually, when I talked to Kathy Yellick over at Berkeley Lab recently about sort of the upcoming Nurse Gate, is what they're codenaming it right now for their system, they've been very conservative about accelerators, these discrete accelerators at least. They're looking for something more integrated, more basically from the standpoint of the programmers, something easier to port than a discrete accelerator hanging off of a PCI bus. So even in the 2015 timeframe, I think they're looking ahead to systems that offer a little more integration and a little more ease of programming from what is available today with these with Intel Mike as a discrete part, and certainly with GPUs
right.
with a whole separate sort of programming environment with CUDA OpenCL. I don't think in 2017 for the Oak Ridge team, I think we will have certainly more integration by then. So there might not be a whole lot of accelerators in the way we see them today on any of those systems, or should say either of those, or any of those systems that are coming out in the next few years. It's going to be a somewhat different architecture, certainly closer to what they're looking at for exascale. These are pre-exascale systems, after all.
Well, right, and fundamentally the point becomes how usable are they? We keep talking in these platitudes of exaflops or 100 petaflops, and there's the fundamental question of how useful these systems are on the way up there. Do you have the program models? Do you have the software in order to leverage this? And, here's the path that we're on the way to exascale systems. I'm not convinced how efficient the current petascale level systems are, and that programmability usability has got to be a big part of this discussion.
Well, it is, and I think the sort of unfortunate thing, if you can see it that way, is we're going through this transition now where we've adopted this accelerator technology that doesn't fit very well into the legacy programming models. So Berkeley wants to sort of skip this phase of it and jump to the next phase where you get back to a more monolithic programming model where the memory is more shared between the faster accelerator and the somewhat slower, or the more parallel accelerator and the faster CPU. And certainly for the exascale systems, you want a programming model that is not something like what we have today, which is, very challenging to a lot of programmers. They have to move a lot of legacy codes up to these, higher performance levels at exascale, and nobody is really that keen on changing their models to the extent that they're having to be changed today. So in a way, I think they're sort of wanting to come back to a more easy to use and more programmer-friendly model. But again, there's challenges there. There's still going to be billion-way parallelism of one sort or another. So
right.
It's not a slam dunk, however, whatever the hardware looks like.
There's challenges everywhere. This is the question, the fundamental question of exascale readiness and whether we're on this same time step that we've been on before, and we keep hearing these hedge bets about when we're really going to be moving out with exascale capable computers. In fact, Science Magazine is now publishing an article written by Robert Service in Science Magazine titled "Who Will Step Up to Exascale?" that leads off with a $2,000 bet between Horst Simon and Thomas Lippert over whether or not an exaflop capable system will be fielded by the beginning of 2020. Horst says no, and Thomas says yes. So, it's a well researched article that goes into a lot of the roadmaps and budgets for exascale.
Yeah, I read that piece. It It is a very interesting article. And I think the gist of it is that the exascale roadmap has sort of stalled lately. And over the past year, there have been some setbacks. And basically, you know, the federal government, at least in the U.S., has really not stepped up. And sort of the DOE itself has sort of been dithering about, you know, specifying what types of funding, what types of systems they're going to need. And whereas maybe a year or two ago, people were a little more optimistic we'd get a system out by 2020. Now, sort of the smart money is saying it's going to be after 2020 now, that we're just not at a point ready even, you know, culturally or from a funding standpoint where we can get a system out in 7 years now.
Well, it just goes to show what a global economic crisis can do, right? I mean, you know, China's looking at their economic situation. We've had the whole Eurozone crisis. The U.S. has been in recession. This article in Science Magazine does an excellent job interviewing Bill Harrod, who says the biggest problem is the budget. Until I have the budget, I don't know what I'm doing.
And yet the DOE itself, and that's under Bill Harrod's purview, has not put forth a plan to Congress saying what they want exactly, what kind of funding they would expect. Now, maybe there's a little reticence about saying, hey, I want $1 billion for this in sort of the current political environment, but that's probably what it's going to take if he wants to do a centralized research and development effort for an exascale computer and have it done by 2020. So I think, you know, maybe there's a little bit too little leadership on the DOE side and too little political will on the congressional and administration side. So I think it's problematic now, and I think that's what the pessimism is all about.
Well, it's a question of, you know, what level of investment is going to come from whom and from when, and, you know, how ready are we for it? And also, to the previous point of how efficient these systems are, making sure it's not an exaflop for exaflop's sake.
Yep.
What are you actually doing this for, and how usable is this system, or is it just a trick or a stunt?
Yeah, I think, you know, U.S. and others may be worried that some other country, China, you know, even Russia or maybe Europe will put out a system that would maybe be a stunt system without the sort of the software heft behind it, just to get their name on the board. But still, I think the odds on favorite are for the U.S. to come up with that first system. I think all the other countries are looking to us as sort of the leader here still, and are looking at us to put together this first system with that's not a stunt system.
U.S. would certainly be the favorite to field the first exascale system, although China is part of the discussion, Japan is part of the discussion, and
yep,
even a few outliers with Russia or a different European country, like you said, it could be possible the European Commission could pull something together. They have to decide what country it would go into, presumably Germany, although France is another possibility.
Yeah, I think at some point, I know at the beginning of this article in Science, you know, there was pessimism about even having a system ready by 2020. I think there will be an architecture there that will potentially be able to hit an exaflop. Whether anybody will want to pay for such a system, because I think it might be rather expensive, not just up front, but to run.
Yeah, energy-wise. It'll be expensive just to turn it on.
So there might be a solution out there that's possible. Now you just have to come up with a country or entity willing to pay for that in that time frame, and depending upon what the economy is like in 2020, that might be in short supply.
Well, what do you think, Michael? Should we pass the hat? How much you got on you right now?
Yeah, probably not enough to run one of these supercomputers for more than a few seconds, unfortunately.
I just checked. I have $23.75 in my pocket.
Oh, there you go. That'll get you the nuts and bolts of the first rack.
I'm at least set up for the long weekend here in the U.S.
Yeah, very good. Well, like you said, this is the pregame show for Exascale, and we'll probably have a number of these as the months and years go on here. So this won't be the last time we talk about Exascale, certainly.
No, we've been doing this podcast a while, so we'll see if we're still doing it when these exaflop computers come out.
All right, very good. Well, good discussion today, and again, we'll follow the news as it comes to us next week.
Thanks, Michael. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.